Welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. I'm pleased to have back today Stephanie Marone with her book Natural Medicine First Aid Remedies. Stephanie's been on the show multiple times with her Natural Mental Health series, which contains almost every major mental health challenge and the natural solution to it. And today we're talking about Natural Medicine First Aid Remedies. Stephanie is also the editor of Audacious Aging, Goddess Chef, Women Leading for a Change. And she is putting together a new compilation work, which has a long title. It's Optimism. And Stephanie, do you remember the entire title of that one?
Yes, I do. And the subtitle, it's Optimism. And then the subtitle is Cultivating the Magic Quality That Can Extend Your Lifespan, Boost Your Energy, and Make You Happy Now.
Well, that's great. That's wonderful.
Hi, Susan.
So today we're going to be concentrating on your natural medicine first aid remedies, and I don't think I've seen any other type of book on first aid remedies like this. Do you know if there are any other books like this, or is yours unique?
There are a lot of A to Z's, which is what I did to make it easy. There are no other books that are quite like this, and the reason why I did this book is because I use natural medicine all the time. And I wrote the book that I wanted as a reference because there are books that are an A to Z of homeopathy.
Mm-hmm.
There are books that are an A to Z of herbal remedies. And, of course, there are lots of different books in especially herbal medicine. But mine combines 8 different therapies under one heading. So, for example, nausea and vomiting will have 8 different therapies that you can use. Choose from to see what you would like to do about that condition. So I really did write the book that I wanted to use as a reference book because I was frustrated at having to consult 10 different books when I was trying to figure out what to do.
And that's really important.
Excuse me, what?
That's really important because as a consumer, you have a symptom. You don't have if you have nausea and vomiting or, cellulitis or any of the other things in here that you want to know all the things you can do.
Yeah, and then you can make your choice, an informed choice. And I also really wanted to hear from practitioners on what they would recommend. So I have I interviewed over 30 doctors, or I should say practitioners for this, herbalists, homeopaths, naturopaths, people who work with crystals and flower essences and essential oils. And I went to the people that I could, because I've been in this field, I went to people that I know are really good. And so I have some of the top people in each of these therapies, and they graciously gave me all kinds of fresh materials. So it's not, there is some places where I had to pull from other books, but for the most part it's original and from these practitioners, which I was very, very honored that I had some of the most wonderful in the field.
Well, let's go through, I just turned to fatigue, which is something that more and more of us are having intermittently anyway,
yeah.
As we try to do 15 different things at once and miss our sleep. Mm-hmm. The first thing that you have is essential oils, and I really love essential oils. I think they're a very good way to treat a number of conditions. And they also don't expire or they don't run out, and they're readily available.
Yeah, if you store them properly, we should say.
Yeah.
They shouldn't be kept in any place where sun can hit them. And,
right.
Best to be a cool, dark place.
So you have essential oils, and then you have flower essences. I used to make my own flower essences. I think
you did?
Yeah, and I did my own crystal essences, too, because you could... do things like increase your spiritual awareness, go out of body. There's all sorts of things you can do with crystal essences.
Yeah, in the I include those in the book too. I call that stone slash crystal
mm-hmm.
therapy. And some of the people that I interviewed for that, they do those kind of preparations. And at the end of the book, in part 3 of the book, there's directions for how you do those kinds of preparations. But back to fatigue, I want to say for the flower essences, wonderful person, Patricia Kaminsky. She's really one of the experts in the United States on flower essences, and mm-hmm. she had a very interesting thing that she told me, which is the original flower essences that many people know are the Bach flower remedies.
Mm-hmm.
And those were designed in the, I think it was the 1930s in England. And she, what she said is that we need different, she uses those as well, but I'm sure, but what she said is we need, in North America, we need different essences that reflect the plants of our native area and also of the modern stresses of life that were not necessarily in play in the 1930s.
Like radiation.
Yes, exactly. So she designed a whole line of flower essences. It's called FES. She's the head of the Flower Essence Society, and that's what that
mm-hmm.
stands for. Those are wonderful because she's expanded on what Bach did with the original, I think it was 38,
right.
flower essences. Yeah, so she gave me some wonderful material, and I love her flower essences.
Yeah, I think we should stop and let our listeners know that these are vibrational therapies, whether they be flower or crystal or mineral or any of these are vibrational therapy. And if they want more information on that, they probably should read Vibrational Medicine by Dr. Richard Gerber, who unfortunately is deceased now. But anyway, he explains it the best way I've ever heard it to understand how these vibrational therapies work, because they're a little bit different than, say, drugs and even some herbal remedies.
Right, yeah, we could also call them energy medicine.
Right,
yeah.
Right. So your next thing is food therapy.
Yeah, I have that section in every one because that's kind of a first line in a lot of cases when you have something going on. And I should say that these are common ailments throughout this book.
Mm-hmm.
That it may be that if they're entrenched, you need to consult a health practitioner. But the first line here is, okay, let's see if I can improve this myself if it's not something that has been going on for a long time. And food therapy is definitely one of the ways to do it. So for fatigue, it's really funny because for many of these conditions, the food to avoid, the substances to avoid, are so often the same. So sugar, caffeine, soft drinks, alcohol, mm-hmm. processed foods, fatty foods, and in this case, limit dairy because that can be congesting. But it's really interesting because that it's so often the same thing. Avoid those substances, which we all know we should avoid, but at least cut them down.
Well, it's extremely important, fatigue, especially if fatigue is caused by the biotoxins in candidiasis, which are aldehydes. And did you know sometimes alcohols? There's actually reports in Japan of candida in the gut producing alcohol so that it raises the blood alcohol level enough to get somebody a ticket.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's been reported in Japan.
So it converts the sugars to alcohol?
There's a strain of candida that does that. I think it's still limited to Japan. But in America, I think the most common is an aldehyde. And so people with overgrowth of candidiasis, which is common if they've had too many antibiotics without antifungals, if they've had too much estrogen or steroid or stress, which produces steroids, or if they've don't have any natural killer T cells like many of my patients with the breast implant problems, AIDS patients, or a growing number of people are just getting immune deficiencies where their natural killer T cells, which fight against viruses, fungi, and mold, candida, and cancer are low. I think that's related to radiation. I think we have a lot more background radiation than we had before.
You mean from cell phones and cell phone towers and that kind of thing?
Some of that, and also just some ionizing radiation, because I think we're having holes in our upper atmosphere that is because of the ozone depletion and some electromagnetic stuff going on, that there's an increase in background radiation. And this you can actually monitor this. There's sites on the Internet. I can't tell you exactly what they are, but there are sites that monitor background radiation, and it's been increasing. And so that's something that I think people's immunity is affected by. especially if they don't get enough iodine in their diet. You know, the thyroid is often the first thing to be affected with increasing radiation.
Yeah,
as you know, with the history of us dropping bombs in Japan. So.
Yeah, and along with that, I don't say it in this section, but I say it in the section on sleep problems, insomnia. That along with that, it's for fatigue. It would also be important to, in keeping with that, to analyze the electronic pollution in your own house.
Oh yeah.
So where you're sleeping, for example, you shouldn't have all these electronics in your bedroom. And to keep the portable phone, people think that
the portable phones.
Yeah, but they think that's the cell phones are the radiation problem, mm-hmm. but the portable phones.
Yeah, the old cell phones were a problem, but the portable phones are quite a problem.
Yeah, and so that needs to all be moved out of your bedroom.
And that can create a signal even if it's not being used. And the other thing, too, you can buy pretty cheap. I got one for about $26 on the Internet, a detector of fields, so that if you happen to be sleeping with the electrical box on the opposite side of your bedroom, where the head of your bed is, that creates a field that is known to be increased with the risk of breast cancer anyway. So you can actually go around your bedroom and measure the fields. Because like if they're on the other side of the wall, you're not going to see them.
Right, right.
You're not going to know exactly what's what. And some people say just moving the bed to another part of the room can dramatically decrease that risk.
Yeah, many of the doctors that I talked to said that kind of thing. And I think it's important that we take these measures to clean up our living space as much as we can, getting rid of all toxins possible, because we live in such a toxic world. So we can't control where the cell tower is, but we can try to do what we can in our own households. Yeah.
And you can wear different things that protect your thymus area. I interviewed the founder of the company doing BioShields at one time on my TV show.
Is
and
that
found
the
out
Q-Link?
How that works.
Is that the Q-Link people?
Well, the Q-Link is probably the first thing that came out, and it's very good. And then BioShield, they put it in more of a jewelry type thing. It looks more like jewelry, but it's still magnets and crystals within the casing. You just can't see them. And then I've been using a lot of the pendants from Zero Point Global, but they have different stones imbued with frequencies that protect the thymus area. And it's particularly important. I took Norm Shelley's course on this. It's particularly important to wear these when you're flying, especially cross-country, if you're flying for more than an hour. It's especially important if you're driving in vehicles that have a lot of electromagnetics, like high-performance sports cars or anything that goes very fast, you know, a boat or planes or anything that has a lot of speed and power are going to put out a lot of electromagnetic fields.
Yeah, I think it really does behoove us to turn to the natural world for some solutions here, and crystals are a wonderful solution, and pendants made out of different materials from the natural world that can help us.
But I felt a big difference, and I see a lot of patients from that are airline people. You know, Delta's based here in Atlanta, and a lot of the pilots and the flight attendants wore the different pendants and felt much better. I don't know if you've noticed. I noticed because of my patients, but people who fly for a living often look like they have premature aging.
Yeah.
And I think it's because of the electromagnetics, at least according to Dr. Norm Shelley, who I actually took his course about 8 years ago, where he talked about electromagnetics and what, you know, where we were really exposed. Of course, if you work in front of a computer, you need to either buy a device that you put on the computer, which is natural-based. I have one that's different things and embedded in a resin. I just leave it there on the computer, or you can protect yourself with these different pendants, too.
Yeah, I first heard about the Q-Link many years ago from Dennis Hopper, the actor, who has unfortunately since passed. But because he was working on the set, there's a ton of equipment there, and he wore it all the time when he was on the set, and also when he flew, because of all the radiation in the movie-making environment.
Yeah. Yeah. The people who are sensitive to electromagnetic fields and know they're sensitive say that these devices do work. And I'm not as sensitive to electromagnetics, but I do, like if I get around machinery, I do kind of feel my energy drop a little bit without them. So
yeah,
I've been
wearing
them for a while.
Yeah.
But in terms of candidiasis, of course, my patients who have candidiasis or problems with that say that anything that turns into sugar, which is, you know, white carbs, alcohol,
yes,
sugar, a lot of processed foods, obviously, they feel a drop in their energy within minutes of eating those things. I guess the yeast really takes off.
Yeah, and I've heard that from people who have immunocompromised situations as well, where they eat sugar. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I should note that I do not cover candidiasis in this book because I consider that a more serious situation that someone really does need to get some help from a qualified health practitioner on that one. Wouldn't you agree with that, Susan?
Yeah. It depends on the degree. I think people with mild candidiasis have the fatigue and some of the other, you know, more general symptoms, and your information probably would be curative for more mild cases.
Mm.
I think someone who has an immune deficiency, however, is going to need immune supplements and treatment of the cause of the immune deficiency,
mm-hmm,
which can be multiple, as we're talking about. I mean, good Lord, there's chemical toxicity, biotoxicity from mold, sick building syndrome. You might have an infection. You might have a cancer. So there's, I mean, immune deficiencies are need a workup probably,
and that can be the source of fatigue as we just talked about. So yeah, that's
right.
That requires some more help. Yeah,
but sleep is one of the best things for fatigue, and people who are able to sleep, at least 8 hours a night, I think it heals the adrenals more than anything. Just resting. Yeah, for people who don't rest.
Fatigue
is often just a lack of sleep or a lack of good sleep. Yeah.
And I remember seeing, I'm not remembering the exact statistic, but I remember seeing statistics that some percentage of Americans are walking around in sleep deprivation, and it was something like 80%.
It's a big cause of trauma. You know, I was a trauma surgeon for many, many years, and I can't tell you how many people fall asleep on the road. And that not only not injures them, but injures who's ever in front of them.
Yeah.
And the big thing is sleep apnea, because people think they're sleeping, but they're not really sleeping. They're gasping for air, and they wake up exhausted. They get in their car, go to work, and fall asleep on the road and hit somebody.
It's
important to diagnose sleep apnea. Because people, honestly, unless somebody next to them is saying, gee, you snore terribly when you sleep, people who live alone don't know. I mean, they don't even sleep.
Yeah.
I guess I could put a tape recorder on and see if they do.
Yeah. maybe we should talk about insomnia. One of the things that a lot of people don't realize is that magnesium deficiency can be a problem in insomnia and other things as well. Such as chronic muscle spasms.
Yeah.
And people don't associate generally, a back spasm with magnesium deficiency, but our soil is so depleted of magnesium that most of us are not getting enough magnesium. And so sometimes that can be an issue, and some people found some relief by supplementing with magnesium. It can help their sleep. But there's a proviso on that magnesium has cofactor vitamins that need to go with it in order to be absorbed, and that's why you often see calcium and magnesium together in a pill, in a supplement.
Right.
So I recommend that, I'm not a doctor, but I've heard this from so many doctors, take a basic supplement and then add your supplements onto that.
Right, the magnesium is very important also for migraines, any spasm condition.
Yeah.
If you take too much magnesium orally, especially certain kinds, you can get diarrhea. If you feel like you need more magnesium, topical magnesium is very good, because many people have a huge magnesium deficiency. I have a funny story to tell you about magnesium. One of my roommates was Kent Boxberger, who is he's listed in one of the top 100 psychics in the in the country, so he's very psychic, right? So he walks downstairs one day. He's upstairs and I'm downstairs. He walks downstairs and he says, "I had a dream that I was supposed to ask you what I needed to take." And I just look at him, I go, "Magnesium." He goes, "Thank you."
That's
so
wonderful.
This is really funny to me.
That's wonderful. I love that.
But,
then,
you know, of course, I heard he needed magnesium, and he did. He took it, and he was much better. He was having some symptoms from magnesium deficiency. But I thought that's hilarious. Instead of telling him directly what he needs, his guides tell him to come downstairs and ask me.
Yeah, that's really funny. Maybe he needs the doctor's stamp of approval on that. Yeah. But,
yeah.
You know, that brings up a really good point that one of the things that a lot of natural medicine practitioners will say is don't just be throwing all these supplements at yourself, you know, that you just say, "Oh, I'm taking 10 different supplements," and it's kind of random. I really urge people to go within and listen to their instinct on it. You can get very good at this if you practice this, to turn in and say, "Do I need this supplement?" And when you practice that and really tune in, you can get the answers that you need. I had an interesting experience with magnesium because I was having, and by the way, charley horses are also another one that sometimes be connected with that. I was having back spasms, you know, and I exercise a lot. You know, I do ballet, and I've done that for years, and I do intense walks. But I think that probably this was happening because I was sitting at the computer a lot as a writer and an editor. But I started taking magnesium, and it cleared it up immediately.
Mm-hmm.
So I just kept taking it. Well, just recently, and I was taking, I was probably taking 1,000 a day.
Mm-hmm.
And I just kept taking it, and I wasn't really listening. And so my skin started having weird things going on it. And I got the message, "Stop taking the magnesium."
Yeah, right.
You know, you don't need it anymore.
Yeah, you had a deficiency, so you have to take it for a while. But then when the deficiency's gone, you can probably...
Right, so
especially if you have a healthy, you know, with green leafy vegetable diet,
right.
You probably get it in your food.
Right, and kale is really good for that.
Kale's
chard,
right.
Yeah. But so I stopped taking it, and my skin stopped having these weird sort of blotches on them.
Mm-hmm.
And it all cleared up. And I said, you know, that's really an example of... Physician, heal thyself. You know, I'm not a physician, but I've done so much writing on the natural medicine. It's like, oh, yeah, okay, who wasn't paying attention?
Yeah, I don't take a lot of things every day. Maybe
I don't either anymore,
things,
yeah.
But
yeah.
I always take coenzyme Q10 because I think that's a good anti-aging. I usually take it as UBQH. And I do take magnesium and malic acid because I do have fibromyalgia. And if I don't take it, then I get a lot more spasms due to long hours in surgery.
Another thing we might want to mention is that people can take Epsom salt baths because Epsom salts are magnesium.
Yeah, and I also, when I don't want to take oral magnesium, I just take the oil. I do the oil. It's drying, though, but it's good. I also topical iodine. I use that intermittently. You cannot overdose on topical iodine. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
Yeah, it just doesn't absorb. So if you're using topical iodine and then you find it's lasting more than 24 hours, quit using it for a while.
There are so many things that people can do at home, and I really do urge people to tune into themselves because all the answers are there.
Yeah, I don't take everything every day either, and I think I'll just get an idea of something I need, and I'll go take it. And the first thing I had, and it's similar to magnesium because it's deficient in the soil, it was a selenium deficiency.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had a dream that I needed to go get a smoothie. And I was going to pick up a tape recorder at one place, and right across the thing in the mall was a smoothie place. So I went to the smoothie place and ordered a smoothie, and then I heard, "Turn around and look at what's right behind you." And right behind me was an immune protector supplement with selenium in it.
Mm.
I was vastly deficient in selenium. And, of course, that's very dangerous for cancer as well as immune problems. So that was how my higher guidance got me to take selenium.
It really is magical when you start tuning in. I've had
it's really amazing.
It really is amazing. And as you know, Susan, I have an animal sanctuary. There's a farm animals.
Uh-huh.
They're called farm animals. And I receive guidance all the time about how to treat their health ailments. And I had a very sick sheep, Charlotte, once, and she was not eating. I was trying all the things she usually loves, and I was out there at 10 o'clock with her. She was very sick, 10 o'clock at night.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden I got the message, blackberry leaves.
Really?
And there are a ton of blackberry bushes all around. So I'm out mm-hmm. there in the dark. I just started cutting blackberry leaves. She ate mounds and mounds.
Oh, my goodness. I wonder what she needed in them.
Well, I looked it up. She had mastitis, chronic mastitis. I looked it up, and blackberry is drying.
Really?
So she knew, and she sent a message to me, and I went and picked her. And, you know, for days after that, I was just picking her blackberries.
Isn't that interesting?
It was fascinating, yeah, because I didn't know. I, you know, as much as I've done this research on herbs, I did not have that piece of information in my head that blackberry would be drying for mastitis, but I looked it up afterward, and sure enough.
That's fascinating. I mean, if people doubt that animals don't know more than we do, they just need to look at the history with the tsunamis, where that elephant that never caused any problems before just uprooted its thing and
headed
grabbed
for the hills,
I think he grabbed a kid and ran.
Yeah.
And then all the other villagers followed him because he had the kid.
But what's also amazing about that is those elephants came back down the hill to help.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, really amazing. Given that they were kept in kept.
I think elephants let us keep them in captivity.
Oh, boy, I don't know if the circus elephants would agree with that, but yeah.
Well, some of them do.
Yeah, they're here to teach us, I'm sure.
Just amazing when you really realize how tuned in the animal world is to danger in the actual world.
Yeah, yes, it's really true. I've had many examples among my animals of them helping each other. It's really very beautiful. Yeah,
it is.
I have a book coming out on that next year.
Really?
I'm calling it Enter the Kingdom. The publishers may change that title, but it's all about how animals teach us unconditional love.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, and I've gotten so many lessons from them. It's been really quite amazing, and from beginning with remedies. Information that, again, I didn't have. And another time, Charlotte told me to get her watermelon. So I got her watermelon. She ate a whole watermelon.
Yeah.
You know, rind and all. You know, that's probably kidneys.
Wild.
Probably kidneys because she had that.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Anyway, it's all, if you tune into your children, the people you live with, your friends, your animals, you can get the information that you need.
You can.
Yeah.
Well, I'll have to interview you on that book when it comes out, because I
would
love animals.
Yeah, I would love to do that. Yeah,
I absolutely love animals. I've always been kind of telepathic with animals like you are. I'll walk into a room, like over at a friend's house, and the cat will be there, and I'll go to the person. Your cat says he has a bladder infection.
Yeah.
You know?
You're what they call a medical intuitive. You really are.
I am, but I'm really tuned into animals for some reason. I don't know
That's
why.
Wonderful.
I guess they, especially when they need to transfer some information, they really transmit hard, you know. Want somebody to know that they're having trouble.
And I think it's so easy for them because they don't have all these filters and barriers in the way.
Right.
So it's very clean, with the information that comes from them, very clean.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
In fact, I knew a vet that had this, a female vet that was actually on my radio show. She said to me, she said, you know, she just knows what's wrong with animals. And one of the examples was a kitten. And the kitten had a diaphragmatic hernia. And she just saw it. She saw it. I mean, isn't that wild? She did the x-ray and found out. But
yeah, that's the medical intuition.
That's really good medical intuition where, you know, she actually sees inside the animal. And
I think the old-time vets, and I say old time because I've seen it I've had numerous vets here over the years.
Yeah, right.
And the old time vets, I think that was one of the talents they had, just like the old time doctors, the doctors that would come to your house. I think that that skill of the healer has been in some ways stamped out by our current medical training. What do you think of that, Susan?
Well, I taught some of the medical students at Emory for a few years on medical intuition, and we started with the dowsing rods and the pendulums, you know, just to see. And I was surprised at how, at least the people who took my course were so intuitive. So I think for medical school you have to kind of suppress it a little bit as you go left-brained, because I think I did too, but yet there were times in my residency, I did my surgical residency in the military, and I remember a year when I diagnosed 3 meckel diverticuli, which is rare, it's like an appendix in the wrong place, and it was in the same month, 3 of them, and my boss said, you know, most surgeons would not see 3 in a career. You've seen 3 in a month, and you've diagnosed all 3 before they went to surgery. So being especially in general surgery, where you have to make the diagnosis in the ER, and then you take the patient up and open them up and see if you're right or not, I mean, it's kind of an interesting feedback. So myself and other people that were very talented, like one of my friends diagnosed tubercular peritonitis, and I said to him, how in the hell did you know this person had tubercular peritonitis? I said, have you ever seen that before? And he said, no.
That's really cool.
I mean, you know, that's like, whoa.
and I think so many doctors, they go into medicine because they want to be healers, and they have that ability in them, and maybe you can keep nurturing it through medical school, but then the system of medicine.
It's just hard. It's a hard system.
Yeah.
Especially now, because you don't make that much money when you get out, and you have really bad debts.
It's just
a much more rigorous course than it used to be. There was a doctor at Emory that taught medical intuition through remote viewing.
Now,
I didn't take his course, but I read about him in his courses. So there are some courses available on that kind of remote viewing for medical things.
And I think we're going to see it more and more.
Yeah. I think that, I mean, at least the medical students I met, I was very pleased. They were more of the indigo generation, and they were very, very, I mean, way more intuitive than I was at the same time. You know, I mean, I felt that they were more advanced than I was. So if they work on it, you know, in terms of either just in their practice or doing other things that increase it, like meditation, which they'll probably be able to do after they pass their board certification.
Mm-hmm.
But until then, they're probably going to be really busy with medical school and residency.
Yeah.
But if they do meditation, I think all of that really increases a great deal. And I don't know, I interview medical intuitives from all over the world, and I'm fascinated with the degree of advancement in medical intuition that exists. Now, granted, not very many are doctors, but it's just amazing how accurate they can get.
And I think it's an example of what we can accomplish ourselves. So back to the idea of first aid.
Right.
I think the first aid you can seek is turn inward and ask your inner guidance what's going on.
Right. And for a friend, even or a child that may not be able to communicate, a neonate or an infant, certainly developing these skills can be life-saving because they can get into trouble very quickly. And you need to know when you should stay at home and when you should call a pediatrician and then when you should go to the emergency room.
And that's a hard call sometimes, and it's better to err on the side of safety and go.
Yeah.
Well, I would love to give the listeners some of the. When I interviewed the doctors, I asked them, "All right, what are the things that you would put in a first aid, a natural medicine first aid kit?" I'd love to talk about that because that could really help the listeners to know what to have on hand, and that can be there are things that can be used for a variety of different conditions. So.
Before you do that, can I just mention 3 things?
Sure.
Because we were just at food therapy. We have herbal medicine, homeopathy, nutritional supplements, reflexology, stone crystal therapy, and then other remedies. I just wanted to finish out the categories
on
fatigue. Okay, go ahead.
Okay. So the top 10, so I did a survey of all the doctors. I talked to 30-some
mm-hmm.
doctors, and then I ranked... Like how many people said arnica, and so these are listed in the order of the ones that got
mm-hmm.
the most votes. So this is a rather random survey. You know, there's nothing scientific about how this was done. It was just simply numbers and votes. So the number one was is arnica,
mm-hmm.
and the recommendation is to have both homeopathic arnica, which you can use anytime there's any if you have swelling, stiffness, pain, bruising. You can use it post-surgery, pre-surgery, post-surgery. And then also a homeopathic gel, which you can put on sore muscles, and that's really very helpful. Then number two is a so-called rescue remedy. This is a flower essence formula, also known as five-flower formula. And this is for instances of shock that you can take it when, like, you carry it in your purse, if hopefully this won't happen, but you have a car accident or a fender bender that's upsetting, you can just take this immediately and take it frequently to
I have supervisors in my office that go around and give the employees rescue remedies.
Oh, really? How great.
When things get out of hand and people get too emotional.
Don't we love your
it's
office?
It's hilarious.
Don't we love your office? That's fabulous. And then the third one is echinacea tincture, which is an all-purpose antibiotic, natural antibiotic. Then having some kind of healing herbal salve. And most of the time they do a combination of calendula and sometimes comfrey and sometimes St. John's wort, which people associate with anti-depression remedy, but it's also can be really good for healing sores and cuts and scrapes. There's just a little proviso on this that you should not put comfrey on a puncture wound because it heals from it would heal the outside too quickly, and puncture wounds need to heal from the inside out. And then lavender essential oil of broad use essential oil that can be used. You can put it on insect bites. You can use it's an antibacterial, antiseptic, and you can also use it to for headaches.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's tea tree. Tea tree is really great for to have it in your first aid kit. You can use it as an antiseptic, so it's again a broad spectrum antimicrobial. But you can also use tea tree. I had a friend who had a very persistent nail fungal infection on fingernails and toenails. And he had tried all kinds of things, and tea tree took care of that. A proviso on that is that if you're on a constitutional homeopathic remedy, you need to ask your homeopath, is it okay to use tea tree? Many of them say no, so that would be a check. Then peppermint, you can use tincture and or essential oil. You can take the tincture orally for digestive ailments, and it's also... like lavender, antimicrobial, and an insect repellent also.
I wanted to give a quick story about peppermint essential oil.
I
have an essential oil which had peppermint, orange, and lemon, and some other things in my pocket, and in my coat pocket. And I put my coat in my locker, and it came undone, and it dissolved into the air, okay? And then one of my employees had a bad headache, and she went into the locker room. And she said within minutes her headache was gone.
Isn't that so great?
Isn't that funny?
That's so great.
And I was going, yeah, but my essential oil is gone too.
That's really great. Another quick remedy I heard for headache was one of the herbalists told me that if you're somewhere where there's fresh rosemary, pick that, crush it in your hand, inhale it, and it can get rid of a headache very quickly.
Really?
I didn't know that one until I talked to him, so that was great. Then aloe vera gel, of course, great for sunburn or any skin things. Activated charcoal. This is especially useful if you're traveling. So if you're going to developing countries where there might be an issue where you get diarrhea, that can be very helpful to have around. Homeopathic belladonna. I was in Hawaii once and got a very high fever for some reason. It was 104. I took homeopathic belladonna, and it totally took care of it. Nothing else would work, I don't think. I didn't have any with me, and so I was trying Tylenol and other things, but nothing worked. And then somebody found a health food store and got me some belladonna, and it worked.
Great.
So those are the top 10.
And then we have cayenne. It's 11.
These are the runners up and honorable mentions. Yeah. Yeah, cayenne. That's an interesting one because I think cayenne is something people also use for heart problems. Is that right, Susan?
If you think you're having a heart attack, cayenne can really be helpful.
And is it also
aspirin too?
So anyway, cayenne as a first aid remedy, lots of different things. Can stop bleeding, improve digestion, stimulate the appetite, relieve gas, and be good for helping sweat out a cold or bronchitis.
Mm-hmm.
And you can also you can break open the capsule and then mix it with lotion or oil, massage it into sore muscles. I mean, these are great things to have around.
Mm-hmm.
And then ginger, of course, many people know this as a cure or an alleviation for motion sickness or nausea.
Mm-hmm.
And you can take it in lots of different ways. You can simply just chew on the root or piece of the root, or you can use capsules or even candied ginger.
It's also safe if you have morning sickness.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't know that. Yeah.
I'm pretty
then,
sure.
I may have put that in my morning sickness one. We'll see. It's been a while since I wrote the books. So I don't remember everything in here. I consulted myself. Homeopathic APIS. That's, again, the homeopathic principle of like cures like. The remedies
mm-hmm.
operate on that principle. And so APIS, which is derived from bees, good for bee stings and other insect bites.
Yeah, I would also put the homeopathic for poison ivy in there.
Oh, yeah.
Rustox.
Oh, there we go, Rustox, yeah. That's R-H-U-S.
It's not in there, but I put it in with APIS because you're just as likely to get poison ivy, at least around here.
Yeah, and back east, back east, it's poison ivy. Out here, it's poison oak, and that would be
right.
good for both of those, yeah.
Yeah.
Since I'm on the West Coast. Eucalyptus essential oil. This is really great to use as an inhalant
mm-hmm.
to clear any respiratory problems, help clear congestion. And St. John's wort, as I said, people know this generally as an antidepressant. It's become famous for that. But it also is an antiviral and anti-inflammatory.
Mm-hmm.
And you can use it to speed tissue repair. Now, in my honorable mentions, I have witch hazel and hydrogen peroxide. There's research on hydrogen peroxide that came out after this book. I'm not sure what to think about it. Maybe you have an opinion on it, Susan. Hydrogen peroxide is oxygen therapy, and people pour it on either straight or diluted onto wounds to cleanse it. A nurse friend of mine who works in a clinic told me that... this is a walk-in clinic, so there's people come in with all kinds of wounds. It's inner city.
Mm-hmm.
And she said that they, after that research, they stopped using hydrogen peroxide. They use water and soap, or sometimes just water, to clean wounds. And because the research said that hydrogen peroxide can actually slow tissue repair. What do you know about that, Susan?
Well, I think it depends on the degree of contamination. For a fresh wound, you could dilute the hydrogen peroxide, like one part to three parts water or something, and it would be fine. But if it's a contaminated wound, I think that hydrogen peroxide, especially half and half, would be great. Hydrogen peroxide will kill white cells as well as bacteria. So I guess it just depends on... the degree of bad things in the wound versus good things in the wound, because it'll kill both good and bad things. So,
That explains
it's
it.
It's a judgment.
I did not stop using it because I got the message not to. So,
I use peroxide. I use half-strength peroxide for most of my wounds and things. I don't use it on grafts though. When you do a skin graft, we tend not to use it on grafts because the graft is. We're delicate, and we don't want to traumatize it with peroxide.
Because it's a bit strong, you mean?
It's too strong, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah,
it's too much of a free radical agent. So, but peroxide, in general, is a very good thing to have in your first aid kit.
Yeah, I think so. So I'm glad to hear you say that, because after that research, I was thought, should I put it in? But I do use it.
Yeah, no, I think you should.
Yeah.
One-time use on a new wound kills bacteria that are just entering, and that is a lot more important than worrying about the tissue edges,
which
did just fine.
And that would be especially important for a puncture wound, because what else can get
in
there?
Yeah, you want to rinse it out real well. And then I think what they're, a lot of these studies are done with gigantic wounds or wounds that are chronic. And
that may be, yeah, they're different. They're a different thing than a kind of fresh puncture wound or a cat scratch, which obviously is going to have, or a dog bite, all those things are going to have a lot of bacteria in there.
Yeah.
Or a barbed wire, you know, barbed wire.
And don't forget your tetanus shot. I don't. What's your review on tetanus shots? That's one of the ones I don't fool around with. I
think it's good to stay up to date on tetanus, and the general recommendations are every 10 years for just in general. And then a tetanus prone wound, we generally want you to have protection within 5 years. And if you don't have protection, we give you Hypertet, which is just, I think, the antibodies against it.
Mm-hmm. That's
tetanus is no fun.
Yeah, that's I'm especially aware of that because of the farm animals that
right.
You know, I don't give them vaccines. Like, there are a lot of people vaccinating for West Nile right now, and
mm-hmm.
I just don't do that. But I don't mess around with the tetanus; it's too scary.
Yeah.
So that I think that's another good point that we can make for your listeners is that natural medicine, my view on it is that use it when at all possible, but there are reasons why we have things like tetanus shots. And it's some people throw the baby out with the bathwater thing.
Right,
it needs to all be natural medicine. And I think that we really need to apply some wisdom here of when do we use the resources of Western medicine and when do we use the resources of natural medicine.
Yeah, that's very true. I couldn't do what I do if I didn't have antifungals, antibiotics, and pain medicine. It would be very difficult. And anesthesia.
Yeah.
It would be very difficult for me.
Would be very difficult to do it with acupuncture. Some of your surgery.
They've done it in China.
I know. I don't know
possible.
I don't know if they've done the complex surgeries that you do with acupuncture, have they?
I don't know. I think they're doing open heart surgery, which, and they might have been using local to help.
Yeah, it is pretty amazing.
Yeah, it is.
The other remedy I wanted to mention, mm-hmm. which I also learned from, where did I learn this? I learned this applied to people first, but I saw it most dramatically illustrated again with Charlotte the sheep. She had a lot of health problems. I rescue these animals, and so she was a rescue, and she had a lot of health problems. So she would get urinary tract infections, and the vet said, I've never seen a sheep with a urinary tract infection. So she was a miracle, that Charlotte. But cranberry powder capsules were
mm-hmm.
the thing that would just knock it out. It was amazing. She responded so well to those, and I didn't have to put her on antibiotics. I would just give her two of those, sometimes four of those a day. And,
yeah, in our clinic, we have something called ClearTract, which is the sugar that is the active ingredient in the cranberry extract. It's a D-mannose sugar, and what it does, it helps prevent the bacteria from attaching to the bladder and, I guess, urethral wall.
Yes, yeah.
And
that's the same function of the cranberry, right?
Yeah, so for women who typically get bladder infections after sex, being on that is good.
Yeah, and I know that people, I've seen it work very well with humans as well, I know that they tell you to drink the unsweetened cranberry juice, but you can get so much, such a concentration in those cranberry powder capsules that you'd have to drink so much cranberry juice to do the equivalent.
Mm-hmm.
So
I
just think it's really a lot easier and better to take the capsules.
Yeah, it is. Or the D-mannose, which is actually the active ingredient in the capsules.
That's
even more of a drug.
That's even more, yeah.
Well, have you heard that there are like five sugars that we don't get much of? You know, those are called the glycoproteins.
No, tell me about that.
Oh, I'm sorry, the glyconutrients. There's a bunch of research in cell-cell communication, especially risk of cancer. And there's five, and D-mannose is one of them, but there's five sugars that we don't get very much of.
And we need them?
And we need them, and there's a multi-level marketing company that produces, I think it's called mannitol or something like that. But,
oh, I know that. Yeah, that's
yeah, and that those are the five sugars. But you can also get them, we sell them just wholesale from a company that makes them wholesale.
Where do they occur naturally?
Let's see.
I mean, how
I guess the D-mannose would
naturally
be in cranberry.
okay.
I read about him, but it's been a while, so I don't want to say because I might say something mm-hmm. incorrect on there. But you can just Google glyconutrients, and all of them will come up as well as where you can get them naturally. But again, many of us have deficiencies in them, so
right.
taking the glyconutrient product for a while anyway should correct that deficiency. It's a good thing to do, or to muscle test, or to ask your intuition if it's something you should do. Because I think it's, you know, the things that we have deficiency in is iodine, especially if we cut out salt and don't eat seafood, selenium, magnesium, and definitely vitamin D. There's a huge deficiency of vitamin D, and it's connected with an increased risk of colon cancer as well as osteoporosis and other things as well. So these are just things that medicine's finding out, and so if the majority of people seem to be deficient in something, there's probably a reason, and you ought to either get yourself checked or go ahead and consult your intuition on whether you need to take it, because healthy living and anti-aging depend on us getting what we need and not too much of things, because that can also cause problems. But it's just good to be aware of all of these things.
And I just learned recently, I didn't know this, that sea salt does not have iodine in it.
No, it doesn't.
So a lot of people have switched.
Seaweed, though.
Seaweed does, yeah.
There's a whole bunch of different really healthy seaweeds that don't just have iodine, but a bunch of minerals that are important.
But that's interesting, because a lot of people have switched to sea salt because it's healthier, but they're not getting the iodine now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We need
so
iodine now.
Eat seaweed. Yeah, and then there was another thing, the vitamin D. Now, I've heard that this rampant, I don't know why this is suddenly coming out now, but that there's a rampant deficiency. And is
mm-hmm.
that because people are spending so much time indoors? Is that what's going on? Or
not
because,
necessarily.
Yeah.
It's probably something in the plastics or some other chemical that we're being immersed in. Last week I interviewed Catherine Pomvovich on her book, something of our DNA and, no, our chemical lies and the something of our DNA. It's a fascinating book on all our chemical toxicities and plastic toxicities. So I imagine it's something we're all getting exposed to.
So it's leaching it out of us?
Either we're not absorbing it or it's something in the pathway. The other thing, too, is that if you take a shower right after being in the sun, which many people do, then you don't get the benefit of the vitamin D.
Oh.
It actually has to be on your skin for a while.
Oh, I didn't know.
So I think
that.
A lot of people go out and maybe take a swim or do yard work and come in and take a shower, and that negates the vitamin D, according to Dr. Merkula on his site. He said
to
not bathe for a while, and that in our society that doesn't happen.
Yeah, and I'm not remembering. Yeah, that's right. I'm not remembering what the cofactors of vitamin D are, what it needs in order to absorb. So it could be we're deficient in the cofactors.
Exactly.
Yeah.
There's probably something. I don't think anybody has actually figured it out yet.
Mm.
Actually, let me give you that book again. It's called Our Chemical Lies and the Hijacking of Our DNA.
Oh, yeah.
Catherine Frombovich. That's a great one. You need to take a look at that one.
Okay.
Stephanie, can we go ahead and give your contact information at this time?
Yes. So my website is www.stephaniemarone.com, and that's spelled StephanieMarohn.com. And there's information about all my books on there, and then my animal sanctuary. And I recently started a practice in Healing Touch for Animals. It's
right.
It's an energy medicine. So I'm learning even more about the energy medicine aspect of things, and it's very exciting. I just wanted to add one more thing that
mm-hmm.
To the list of things that would be really good for people to have around.
Mm-hmm.
A neti pot, NETTY, if you don't already have one. This is so great. I have people, I myself don't get sinusitis or sinus infections. I don't get colds all that often. But people who do, and also people who have allergies, swear by this, that it's a way to rinse out the sinuses. And you can just get a neti pot at health food stores or Chinatown. If you live in a city that has a Chinatown, it's part of traditional Chinese
medicine. You can get them at CVS.
Can you really?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
I've used neti pots for a long time, and myself and my patients. I had my basement or crawl space flooded and had mold. They got in my sinuses, and so I put tea tree oil in the neti pot solution.
Wow, that's intense.
Just a couple of drops. Don't do too much.
Yeah.
And it worked. It worked very well.
Yeah, that's great. We should also add that people, if they're, you know, to use essential oils, it really is important to use high-quality essential oils, medical-grade essential oils.
Yeah, and read the directions, because a lot of essential oils can't be used even in the ear canal.
Yeah, that's important.
You really have to read the directions. You can't put these, you're not supposed to drink them, put them in your eye, in your ears, or in your nose without specific instructions, because they can really burn.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, or some of them are toxic, too, if you take them internally. So you really have to get a book. And there's essential oil books. Or buy this one. Buy the Natural Medicine First Aid Remedy.
That's right. And
don't do it if it doesn't say you can.
Thank you, Susan.
There you go. Well, next week we have John James, whose book is The Great Field. And then we have Christine Page on the 6th of November, 2012, in the Galactic Center. We have Ivan Rados on the 13th, Health, It's All About Consciousness. And then Dr. Daniel Benoit is coming back to talk about his Healing Research Volume 3, Personal Spirituality, Science, Spirit, and the Eternal Soul. Then on the 27th, we have the Deja Vu Enigma, Journey Through Anomalies of Mind, Memory, and Time. So we're going to have a great lineup for the next month or so, and we hope you join us. We also have the Noetic Science Meeting on the third Thursday. Paul Esch will be presenting his latest developments. Paul has a lot of talent developing electromagnetic shielding devices and other treatment and protection devices, and he'll be filling everybody in at the Dunwoody Center at 7:30 on the third Thursday in November. Stephanie, thanks so much for joining us. I look forward to your animal book. That'll be great.
Yeah, thanks for having me on again, Susan. It's always a pleasure.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. Well, this is Dr. Susan Cobb. We've been interviewing Stephanie Marone. Her book is Natural Medicine First Aid Remedies. It is the only book. We've established it is the only book that is complete on first aid remedies with natural medicine. So it's one you've got to have for your first aid kit, and everybody should have one. This is Dr. Susan Cobb. Join us next week on Temple of Health Radio Show.